Welcome back to Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. It's time now for another installment in our monthly series, Living Questions, in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. We're producing this series in partnership with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. In February of this year, the ICJS inaugurated a three-part lecture series called Imagining Justice in Baltimore, in which a Christian, Jewish, and Muslim scholar each address how his or her religious tradition understands the notion of justice and how that applies to our community. After the wrenching events in the city last spring, the Institute hopes, with this series and other programs, to bridge ethnic, socioeconomic, and religious divides and to deepen public understanding of the way justice seeking is defined and pursued by different faith traditions. My guest this morning is the third and final speaker in this series, who will address this topic from the Muslim perspective. Najiba Saeed is Assistant Professor of Interreligious Education at the Claremont School of Theology in Claremont, California. Professor Saeed is recognized internationally as a leader in peace building. She has done award-winning work in Southern California, reducing violence in the schools there and in mediating interracial gang conflicts. Her international conflict mediation efforts include work with Israelis and Palestinians, as well as work in Guam, Afghanistan, India, and elsewhere. Professor Saeed joins us from the studios of KPCC Radio in Pasadena. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here to spend some time discussing what I'll be talking about in my lecture.
Let's start with this notion of justice and whether or not there's, in your view, a consensus about what justice means, a consensus between the three Abrahamic religions, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, and even within Islam itself. Do you think there is a consensus?
You know, I think consensus implies that everyone agrees on one form of how justice is practiced, how justice is defined. And honestly, within each tradition, there might be a wide variety of definitions. And so one thing I would say is, you know, we have to be really, really aware that in defining justice, we actually use a justice-based process and not impose one universal definition that doesn't allow for minority viewpoints or differential perspectives on justice.
Does the Islamic notion of justice, is that premised completely and only in the Quran? Is it premised in tradition, in practice? I mean, how does it emerge from the Islamic tradition?
So in my lecture, I'll be focusing particularly on social justice ethics. And one of the contributions that I think the Muslim sources, the scripture, you mentioned the Quran, you know, to engage the Quran, scholars have always looked to the oral tradition of Prophet Muhammad, the Hadith. So one doesn't just take a verse from the Quran and not engage the practice of Prophet Muhammad. And in fact, there are lots of sources that Muslims draw on for their practice of social justice. There is also the notion of culture or custom, which in fact is a commonality between Islam and Judaism in relationship to the text. So not only is text important, but also context. So the way that people in Baltimore engage social justice, a Muslim scholar and practitioner, a peacemaker on the ground there would say, you know, I'm not just going to engage social justice, I'm going to look at what the needs are of local people in Baltimore, what are the concerns, what are the issues. So I want to remind all of us when we engage religion, it's not just text, but also context that needs to be informing and illuminating how we construct a relationship towards any particular religious tradition. And in fact, most religious traditions have an affirmative kind of duty in interpretation to look at context.
On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. It's Maryland Morning and our series called Living Questions. My guest this morning, Professor Najiba Saeed, an assistant professor of interreligious education at the Claremont School of Theology. She'll be speaking in Baltimore a week from tomorrow. Professor, one of your main focuses of research concerns mediation between law enforcement and minority communities. This is a very prevalent and important issue here in Baltimore. We had riots, as I'm sure you know, a year ago, premised in part on people of color feeling targeted by the police and feeling subject to a good bit of police misconduct. When you do this work on mediation between law enforcement and communities. What are the ingredients of that work, and what can we learn from it here in Baltimore?
Part of the process of conflict resolution, and I would say in this case, engagement on the issues that you've mentioned, is to look at some models of what has already worked. Part of my hope is that as I'm engaged in my conversations with leaders on the ground, is to hear from, you know, peacemakers on the ground that may not be given the pulpit, they may not be given a microphone, because so often the stories that are shared and the narratives that are put out there around communities is that there's an inevitability of violence or conflict. And what I find is that the notion of peacemaking happens street by street. There may be a mother in a neighborhood that is doing peacemaking work that isn't recognized. And there's also this myth that communities can do peacemaking and not look at issues of what we call structural violence. So in my work, more and more, I've looked at what is leading to violence, whether it's, you know, if it's perpetrated by police officers, what are the cultures of violence that exist within a community? Because a lot of times we put the responsibility just on the community, but we also have to ask and look at the structures within the city, whether it's local government, whether it is causes of economic origin that are supporting what we would call structural violence. So I think we have to have really deep conversations, and that's where I would say faith leaders have an important role. They're the ones who can convene individuals, but also have a large convening power within and across traditions.
The Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life reported earlier this year that more than 16% of Americans identify as unaffiliated with any particular faith. It's more than double the number of people who say that they were unaffiliated as children. Does that indicate to you that the capacity of religious communities to play a role in mediating for peace is diminished? Do you think that the role of religious communities in this process is still as vigorous as it once was?
I think it continues to be a vigorous role, as you describe it, for a couple of reasons. One of them is that on the ground, in many communities where institutions, I talked a little bit earlier around structural violence, where there's been an underinvestment in particular communities, so institutions, whether they're commercial or nonprofit or otherwise, haven't been given the investment historically, faith communities are often the institutions that have carried the community organizing role, or they have been the ones that offer social services. So I think it's important to think about unaffiliated folks as well and consider which community you're engaging in, what are the institutions on the ground. One of the things we're really missing in a lot of conflict engagement is really assessing the local resources. So what are the assets on the ground? And in fact, I would say in almost all the conflicts that I have worked on in some of these areas, that faith leaders continue to play an important role, but not just for their particular congregations. Many people who don't identify with a religious community still look to faith leaders as moral leaders. And also, I think you've identified something that faith leaders need to come to terms with, is being able to have a conversation with those that identify as secular humanists, or those that identify, you know, we see this idea of people who are culturally Muslim or culturally Jewish but may not be adherents coming to the mosque on a regular basis or coming to the church. So how do faith leaders continue to serve their own purpose, their own congregation, but also be relevant for problem solving and be turned to as, you know, an asset for peacemaking? It invites to the table not just one religious tradition, but it also should invite to the table individuals and communities unaffiliated with any particular congregation.
I couldn't agree more that it's going to take an interfaith effort to address these issues of peacemaking in any sustainable way. And I wonder, given the fact that, polls have also shown that fewer than 20% of Americans view Muslims favorably, 56% in a Pew poll said that the values of Islam are at odds with American values. We've got Islam front and center in the Republican presidential race. We've got all sorts of intolerant acts happening all over the country towards Muslims. How do you reckon the efforts that you're doing with interfaith peacemaking and the impressions, the images that so many Americans unfortunately appear to have?
I think you bring up a really good point, and that's sort of this question of who is a Muslim? What does a Muslim look like? What does a Muslim say? And the most dangerous narrative around the Muslim community that helps to serve what we would say kind of otherizing or continuing to view Muslim community leaders, Muslim communities as the other and the enemy is this notion that the whole community looks exactly the same, that all Muslims are monolithic, that they all agree, that they're all a one physical visual representation. And what we know is that Muslims in America are one of the most ethnically diverse communities. So when you ask me about current trends of what we call Islamophobia, you know, I would point to the Muslim community in Baltimore, which is several decades old. The African-American Muslim community in Baltimore has been playing a peacemaking role on the ground. There are neighborhoods in Baltimore in which the African-American Muslim community has intentionally built homes and institutions and social service operations. So one of the things I think is an antidote to Islamophobia is engaging and learning about the diversity of the Muslim community, because it's impossible to say such a community is the enemy and the other when the community is here and has been in Baltimore and in America for over 500 years. And I think that is really, I would say, a key to understanding Islam, is to move away from just thinking about text, thinking about religion as happening within one sphere. I think religion is happening in the streets when peacemakers are thinking through, how do I do and engage violence that's happening in the community, and be someone who embodies peace and social justice. So Baltimore has a long history of that. And interestingly enough, you know, as we're talking, I grew up in the Northern Virginia and D.C. area, and one of my really great heroes was a mentor, Sister Mariam Funches, who was African American, a Muslim leader, and she had and worked on domestic violence issues, and this is over 20 years ago. So I think these stories need to be told, these stories of Muslims who are bringing a social justice ethic to the problems of our time and manifesting nonviolence in ways that are so profound that they've affected the community of Baltimore for generations.
Najiba Saeed is assistant professor of interreligious education at the Claremont School of Theology in California. She's the third and final speaker in a series launched in February by the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies called Imagining Justice in Baltimore. Professor Saeed will be speaking a week from tomorrow at 7 o'clock at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture. Professor, it's been a delight to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to my lecture and to meeting community members who I think will teach me quite a bit as well.
We do, too. You've been listening to our monthly series, Living Questions, in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. We're producing this series in conjunction with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. You can hear this and all of the conversations in our Living Questions series at wypr.org/livingquestions. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.